Communities are reeling from natural disasters across the continent as activists call for immediate climate action. This follows an IPCC report released earlier this year highlighting the crucial role Indigenous people play in caring for the ecosystems that they've looked after for generations. This is something First Nations campaigners have been saying for years. And today I speak with award-winning wildlife conservation biologist Tiani Jade Adamson about her insights on centering these knowledges in addressing the climate crisis.
It's such a pinnacle part of climate justice and the climate movement and everything that we're seeing in terms of social justice being at the pinnacle of climate justice. And we can't have any social justice without First Nations justice leading that. So it's a really good opportunity to seed sovereignty, to do truth-telling and to have First Nations leadership and, I guess, First Nations empowerment coming through these stories to lead these, because, like, I was spending time at the SA Museum today and walking around and looking at evolutionary biology and paleontology and the history of Australia in the land, we're basically the only country that has lived in harmony with animals for the amount of time that we have. Like, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people lived in harmony with animals and plants really well throughout the longest of all humans, which I think is pretty amazing. It shows our groundedness in our care for the environment. And so in this movement of climate justice and climate change, we need to make sure that the people that know how to look after and manage this land, whose land it still rightfully is, are leading the conversations and the care for country in that way as well.
For sure. And you've been in the space or in the industry for quite a while, and you've had a prolific career in, I guess, conservation. What did you find was maybe missing in terms of incorporating First Nations knowledges, or what did you think was positive and has developed in this time?
Yeah, I think coming into the space, you know, as a teenager or even before that when I was in school, it was very much led by Eurocentric or Western science. And then as I was moving through my tertiary education, there was kind of a little bit of insight about the value of First Nations leadership in fire and burn-offs and caring for country, and the way that our flora and our fauna really rely on fire and management from First Nations people to care for and look after country to be able to keep it healthy and keep the fire load low and all those types of things. And I think working in the space and being a First Nations person and living in a variety of different Aboriginal communities all over Australia, I know that we have incredible ways that we care for country. We read country really well and have this, I guess, like a different sense. You know, you talk about five or six senses, this seventh sense of this intuition and not being separate from the environment but being equal to, and that way of living, knowing, being and doing, being so tied in with that. And I think that's what has been missing in the conservation space. I think people who work and enjoy conservation feel that within themselves, but the leadership that comes from First Nations people has been lacking, and it's definitely growing now in a lot of different spaces, which is great, but we need to make sure that the interactions that we have with our elders and with our knowledge holders, that these interactions are authentic and that people are being, you know, adequately, I guess, reprimanded for their time and valued as a person rather than having transactional relationships, which always becomes a concern when you're working with marginalised communities.
I know that you have a special interest in marine conservation. Was there something that got you into this?
Yeah, I think growing up, spending lots of time on sea country, so diving, being out on boats, you know, our diet growing up was mainly from seafood, so scallops and fish, living on the Eyre Peninsula, going out and spending a lot of time, you know, fishing on the boat and then, or diving and then coming back and grabbing some veggies out of the garden, and that's, you know, what we lived off of. So when you survive off of a resource like that for so long, you had to do, well, you automatically develop a big respect and care for it, because the health of the water and the health of the organisms that exist in there is intrinsically the health of yourself. And so I think seeing the way that the ocean was changing in terms of pollution and plastics and, you know, ocean acidification and all of these huge climate issues that are starting to affect the health of the ocean, that became really concerning. And I had an amazing trip on the One and All when I was a teenager, and came across to Nipaluna, like Hobart area, and there's a beach around there where the Derwent Sea Star was still thriving when I got to go across, and I was diving with that as a 16-year-old. And then at around 22, 23, it was declared the first Australian marine animal extinction, and that sort of hit really hard, because it was like within such a small amount of time, I'd been swimming in these waters and, you know, observing it within the freshwater area, freshwater, saltwater, brackish area, and then later on in my life it becomes the first extinction, and not in a time period that was, you know, when I was a teenager and then I'm a 99-year-old, but within 8 or so years. Absolutely crazy.
That was wildlife conservation biologist Tiani Jade Adamson speaking with me about centering First Nations knowledges in addressing the climate crisis.